Hello everybody, and welcome for this 23rd webinar, which as usually we start with a short alignment. So make yourself comfortable. Withdraw your attention from the lower sense perceptions and achieve stillness in the three lower fields of the personality: physical, emotional, mental. And then raise the consciousness into the head, carrying the consciousness upward through the astral body and the mind to the soul. Identify the personality consciousness with the soul consciousness, and realize that they are one. Assume the attitude of the observer upon the mental plane, and throw soul energy down into the center at the base of the spine. And then raise the soul energy slowly via the centers in the spine and via the two centers in the head up into the soul body upon the higher mental levels. Recognize the personality is aligned with the soul, forming one unit. And there is a fusion of the individual soul with the group soul on the level of the soul on its own plane. Then link the heart center in the spine with the heart center upon the mental plane where we find a response to group vibration and feel the group laugh uniting all the members of the group into one unit. And we sound the Om together as a group. Thank you. Now the focus of today's webinar is primarily and only the entering of the garden and climbing of the ivory tower every Sunday morning, which is the final section or theme of the July 1935 instruction, which it was recommended that to read prior to this webinar. because during the final stages of my preparation, I realized that there wouldn't be left time for the another intending topic of entering a period of crisis prior to the full moon in May 1936, which is the opening theme of the next January 1936 instruction. So I apologize for this late announcement of this change, or I would say not including the second part of the intending focus of this webinar. But don't worry, we have enough to discuss today. So, BL, would you please put up the instruction on the screen that we remind ourselves, refresh our memories as to what we would be focusing upon today. So we will read it together. As to your garden, my brother, I would ask you to enter into it early each Sunday morning. See your garden sleeping in the darkness of the dawn. No real light, no sound or movement, and no life apparent. It remains just dreaming and colorless. Enter your tower and climb to the summit, and then release the light which is in you. This will be to the garden of your soul what the sun is to the gardens of the world. Watch for rays of light pouring out over the garden, awakening it to color and beauty, arousing it to movement and life, and calling forth the song of the birds and hum of the bees, and evoking it to a responsive loveliness. There I may meet you when the cloud of glamour rolls away. Ponder on the symbolism hidden in this garden, and work steadily for the next few months from this center of love and light. And so this is found in Dina 1, page 513, at the end of July 1935 instruction. Okay. And so, as DK is asking her to ponder on the symbolism hidden in the garden, we will also ponder and endeavor to read the text spiritually. We are told that spiritual reading involves the development of the faculty of reading or seeing the life aspect which the form veils. It has a reference to the mental body or the mind, to see behind a symbol, and concerns the development of the sense of subjective realities, and it deals with the reading of symbols or geometrical forms and souling an idea or thought. And this obviously concerns the mental plane where we find all these geometrical forms and symbological language, where CDP has built her garden, and where we also find the soul. So we need to read with the eyes of the soul and with the inner vision open to that what we are seeking to find behind the symbols. And the reading of symbols produces contact with the soul, whose nature is light. And light is a symptom, an expression of life. You see the major two qualities in this symbological garden, light and life. Light of the soul must, as we know, dissipate by the energy of illumination, the glamour, because only then DK would be able to communicate with her. Through the abstract mind and meet her at the summit of the tower, which is also symbolized the Antakarana, where beside the abstract mind on the first mental subplane we find also spiritual telepathy. Which he needs to access in meditation through the Antakarana, linking the lower mind with the higher mind. Now, in order to communicate as soul to soul on the higher mental plane, the soul mind brain has to be in complete alignment, which was not the case with this disciple. But it appears that one of the reasons behind the building of the garden on the higher mental plane was to initiate the development of this telepathic work between soul, mind, brain, and that is why she was also part of the group of telepathic communicators. And as an accepted disciple, she was somewhat able to work as conscious soul with soul-mind alignment in place, functioning, and thus becoming spiritually impressionable, and the master could begin to impress her with group ideas via her soul, and also to teach her technique of contact with him. Very unusual technique he's using here, which involved building of the bridge to the first mental subplane. And this was also one of the reasons behind the building of the tower. Okay? A rather unusual technique for developing contact with the master here. Okay? This is telling us there is no one technique for everybody. Everybody needs a different technique. Now, symbol is an outward sign of an inward and spiritual reality, which it veils. And so we are urged to study symbols. When we are dealing with energies and forces, it is impossible to express their appearance or quality or purpose except in symbolic form. The symbol, the same as color, veil a thought or an idea, okay? And we need to break through that veil. So all impressions, as we know, must be interpreted in symbols. And via these, the registered impression is conveyed to the brain. That's why you see the necessity behind the soul-brain alignment also. Okay? Without the brain, nothing materializes out. So true interpretation of a symbol also can be distorted by astral interference and glamour, particularly in the case of this disciple, which had many glamours. Okay? So that's why the necessary establishment of a channel and direct alignment between the soul and brain, which will involve the integration of the etheric, astral, and mental body. And this process of alignment, we are told, should be started and developed upon the path of probation and brought to a relatively high state of effectiveness during the probationary discipleship covering the little chelaship and chela in the light. As we know, CDP, who has transferred from chela in the light onto the accepted discipleship, which is the stage 3 of the 6 stages of discipleship, had a problem with etheric devitalization. And even though she had to some degree achieved astral mental integration, the etheric body was loosely combined with the physical. And thus the direct alignment between the soul and brain was not really functioning. And this was further affected by the many glamours influencing her life. Now, color is related to light, characterizing the soul, which is expressing through the quality of its form or causal body, or the egoic lotus, more to say in this case, which, to my present understanding, symbolizing the garden of her soul. But when she enters the garden, you see there is a process which she had to repeat every day, you know, to really bring the light and life and sound and color and movement into this garden, which is the egoic lotus flower. Now all sounds express themselves in color, and color is the result of sound uttered, in this case, at the culmination of meditation by sounding of the Om. She was asked to meditate every Sunday morning and visualize the garden sleeping and to bring without light, life, apparent life, and bring it to life. We see that there is a gradual growth indicated here, from dawn or morning twilight to sunrise through ever-increasing splendor of light. And so we are told that the order dawn, day, midday, twilight and night is order even for the planetary logos, and it applies also to man. And we see this process indicated in this garden. Because you see, at every point, like dawn, day, midday, twilight, night, we find a different energetic and energies and forces available. And it also applies to the initiatory process. Why certain initiation could be taken at a particular order of this process. Twilight, midnight, day, dawn. Okay? And for example, there was one disciple who was asked to sit quiet for 10 minutes three times a day, morning, noon, and evening, and ponder on the idea of love and light as they exist apart from form. One of the techniques, you see, DK used for this disciple, for example, for a particular reason in relation to his individual development. Okay? Now, I'm sure many of you know that the star of the early morning is Lucifer, the light bearer, the soul. The mind, Venus, represents all these energies. That's why in order to utilize this light, you see, she had to enter the garden in the morning. And we all know that early morning meditation is suggested many times for this reason, because there is available this energy of the light, okay, primarily coming under the planet Venus, the star of the early morning, okay. Now there come a very important question for us to answer. Why Sunday? Why not any other day of the week, but why Sunday? Now, this is a very important, because you see, every day of the week is conditioned by one of the rays, one of the seven rays energies. And Sunday is ruled by the first ray of will and power, viewed as life principle seated in the heart. And it is ruled by the sun, veiling Vulcan. We are told, okay? And the esoteric color red and exoteric color orange, which might not be completely correct, but these are the colors given. We're dealing here with the prana, life, and vitality, you see. And Vulcan, first ray planet, okay, we, as we know, sun and moon always veil a planet, okay. So in this case, for this day of Sunday, it is the Vulcan here. Why Vulcan is the ruler of Taurus, the sign of light and illumination. It symbolizes the garden also. Prana and vitality is connected with the second house, which is a Taurus house. Okay? Where we find in the chart, we will see it later when the quadra will be put on the screen. We find that the natal and progressed Uranus is the planet which is ruling the etheric field in relation to the vitality and prana also, together with Vulcan. And Vulcan and Uranus are rulers of the head center. And they are brought together through this energy of the Sunday first ray energy. Okay? A light is a form of vibration and is associated with the first aspect, but sometimes with the second aspect. Like, for example, vibration is associated with the first subplane, related to the head and the first ray. And light is associated with second subplane, related to the heart and the second ray. Those of you who are the regulars of these webinars recall that we were talking about the three-year Vesak cycles, which this disciple was utilizing, okay? The second ray and the first ray cycle, which is actually culminating at the Vesak May full moon in 1936, okay? We would be talking more about that when we come to the next instruction in the next webinar. So again here, we are having a two-ray energies in this garden, okay? We know that CDP was a very strong second-ray type, having 3-6-ray conditioning at three levels, personality, astral, and even the brain and physical body, and a second-ray soul, fifth-ray mind. Only one ray on 1357 line. So you see, she needs this first ray of orange and red because they are the energies of detachment. Her major issue in that incarnation, to develop detachment, okay? Which had to be combined also with the heart center. A part of that heart center energy, okay? To get all the emotional stuff out of it. Now, BL, would you put now the quadra wheel on the 11th September 1935? Thank you. And so what we're going to look now, it's first the natal sun in Aries, right in the middle wheel there, okay, where we also most probably find Vulcan in Aries. Obviously, we don't have its exact placement, so we cannot look at Vulcan very much. But his placement in Aries bring a further first ray energy because first ray is also going through Aries. Okay? So very powerful placement, you know, Vulcan in Aries bringing a strong first ray. And the sun is making a trine aspect to the natal Uranus in Leo. And the midpoint Sun-Uranus we find in 18 degree Gemini 30. In there, yes. Where we find the progressed Sun reaching this midpoint exactly on that 11 September 1935. That's why I have selected that day. In September, okay? Because the Uranian energy, as we have seen, is very important in relation to the first ray also, and also to the prana and vitality, okay? And on the same day, the transiting sun is found at 18 Virgo, and the transiting Jupiter in 18 Scorpio. Now this is quite, again, you know, I have selected this to to bring the point very clearly into our mind that we have here the head and heart centers brought together again. Okay? Because there is an activation of that Sun Uranus natal midpoint with the progressed Sun. Then comes the transiting Sun and transiting Jupiter, which is her second ray soul ruler. Very important planet. Okay? Now, the ivory tower also represents the first ray energy, which we already discussed in detail in previous webinars. It had to emerge into outer expression, this first ray energy. But as a result of the subjective work of the soul on its own plane, which is the first atomic subplane of the mental plane. Okay? Where we also find the head center, and both the subplane and the head are conditioned by the first ray. Okay? Now the light which he was to ask to release over the garden from the summit of the tower or the first mental subplane was, to my present understanding, the light in the head, representing the sun with its rays of light pouring out over the garden and arousing it to life. And the garden, again, to my understanding, could symbolize the egoic lotus, or lotus flower, which is found on the three higher mental subplanes where she was building the garden. The planet Vulcan is a craftsman here, stands for the soul fashioning that which is beautiful, beautifying the egoic lotus or the lotus plant. Now the song of the birds could symbolize the vibration of the petals, where each petal has its own note or quality. And together, they create a song in a particular keynote. Now you see, I am only touching here on this process, because to go into a deeper analysis of the egoic lotus and the petals, you know, that is a subject not easy and not for this webinar, okay? The hum of the bees could symbolize the turning of the wheels of the centers, or lotus flowers represented by the three circles of the egoic lotus. The throat center in relation to the knowledge petals, the heart, love petals, and the head, the sacrifice petals. Okay? That's why he is using this symbologic language, hum. Like the, you know, the steady rotation humming. And the bees, you see, the bees are in the real garden, but in this garden, to my understanding, these are the wheels turning around, okay? And they also can turn slower and faster, okay? That depends, you see, how they are activated. Because, you know, in every circle, we find a one petal which is related to all the other petals, where we find five colors in each petal. Okay? So the process which could be gone on a deeper level into this symbological garden is really, you know, it needs, I don't know how many webinars itself. But, you know, we cannot go there. Technically, you see, we are told that the light of the soul is found in the region of the pineal gland. We are told it is the home of the soul. Okay? And is the lowest point which pure spiritual life reaches direct from the monad. It is also the termination of the first strand of the sutratma, which is the giver of life. And we know that the head center is the externalization of the pineal gland. It appears that her head center should be stimulated here into increased aliveness. Okay? That's why he is giving such a strong focus in the symbology to the first ray energy there. Because this would transmute phenomena into spiritual realization and enable for her to see the soul in all things. And in those particularly she loved, and to relate to them as souls, not as personalities. Okay? When she started to build the garden, if you remember, she was utilizing the Ajna center, the other center in the head, and the pituitary body. Okay? Ajna is the externalization of the pituitary body. Where DK was almost directly telling her the point of this exercise of building of the garden is to utilize and that develop the Ajna center. And now, DK brought into her attention the head center and the pineal gland. Now, I'm sure many of you know that these two centers in the head, crown and Ajna, become active when they become active. The light in the head shine forth, and its quality and brilliance indicates also the measure of our soul control. The light in the head on the higher mental plane is the mediating light between the light of the soul and the light of the personality. That's why Ajna is the personality relation and the soul is the head. Because the pineal is the seat of the soul. Only when the will of the personality and the will of the soul come together, which had to be evoked by love, does the light of the soul dominate the material light of the personality? Okay? Now, this mediating light is also a place of transference, of processes of transference. And for CDP, it is the transference from the sacral to the throat centers in relation to the light in the head and the pineal gland and the pituitary body. Because these processes are aligned or related to each other. The activity of these two points of light within the head and its relation to the transmutative process of the energies from the sacral to the throat centers, which started at the first initiation, has reached a stage now when she is ready, as she became accepted disciple, as she entered the stage 3 of accepted discipleship, she was ready for greater stabilization of the line of light between these two centers and the two glands, Ajna crown, pituitary body, and pineal gland. And also to speed up the transmutation process between the sacral and throat centers. Okay? We are told that it is the energy let loose at the first initiation and distributed into the sacral and throat centers via the slowly awakening head center, which brings the transmutation process to a successful conclusion and stabilize the relationship within the head. Now, this process takes several lives of steadily intensifying effort, we are told, on the part of the first degree initiate. And its relative completion occurs at the second initiation. Okay? But I think this final completion occurs at the third initiation. Okay? Both the first and second initiation has to have these processes either initiated, like the first degree taken, then coming to a greater power, making the second initiation possible, and finalize at the third initiation. And she was a first degree initiate. Okay? At the middle point between the first and second initiation, entering accepted discipleship. Okay? The light in the head, we are told, is brought about by the fusion of the light existing in substance itself and the light of the soul. Now, this light of substance is created by the energy of solar angels, which shape the matter of the higher mental plane into the egoic lotus. And the light in the head is the magnetic line to soul consciousness also. And this disciple was in a position to build her garden through a process of establishing unity between the soul, mind, and the light in the head, where the creative agent of the garden, symbological garden, was her soul, through which its energy could express itself. It means through the egoic lotus, symbolizing the garden. I'm sharing here my present understanding of the symbology of this garden, okay? Now, she was asked to work steadily for next few months from this center of love and light. So what we will do now, we will look what astrological energies will reflect and influence her working process. Okay? I think for one moment, BL, we would need that natal chart. I thought we might not, but it's better to. Thank you. You see, there are three planets which carry the first ray and condition the head center. And they are Vulcan, Pluto, and Uranus. Now, unfortunately, we are not able to locate Vulcan to the degree which we would like to have a look, its influence here, which is very important in the energetic processes of the garden, which it's only approximate, as I already said, in Aries. So our first step would be to locate the Uranus-Pluto midpoint. And this is found at the 4-degree Cancer 09 in close conjunction to the natal ascendant at 4-degree Cancer 25. Now, is it this accident? I don't think so. Okay? I was looking for it, and I knew it had the importance, but I was neither expecting that it would be such a significant placement in the ascendant, near the ascendant, almost exact conjunction, indicating, you know, that the building of the garden and bringing the head center into greater activity was not only an important part of her soul's purpose with that ascendant, but that the first ray energy was a vital factor in its creation, you know, of the garden and its use, utilization. And this, you see, we are learning something very important here through this disciple, okay? And that is how very significant is this middle point between the first and second initiation, and entering at that point the accepted discipleship, where, if you remember, we were talking how many processes are initiated there, either from a complete beginning or increased activation of energies in those processes at this point. Okay? Now, this natal ascendant, where this Uranus-Pluto midpoint is found, carries also another important midpoint, and that is Mercury node, the nodal axis, okay? Which is found at 3 degree Libra 30, making square to that ascendant and to the other midpoint. Libra. Okay? There. And in combination, you see together with the ascendant Mercury node Uranus Pluto energies, it indicates the utilization of the abstract mind represented by Mercury here through the Antakarana in meditation, which is ruled by Mercury, and strengthening of the soul contact. Okay? So we have not only the head center indicated or the first ray energies, we are, you know, utilizing the abstract mind on the first mental subplane, where we find the head center and the first ray. You see? We need to bring up the quadra wheel now, BL, please. And if you can put it on the 1st July 1935. Thank you. Now, in the early July, and I selected the 1st of July, the transiting Uranus in 4 degree Taurus, 50 there, is activating the natal ascendant at 4 degree 25, okay, Cancer. And those two midpoints which we just looked at, and that is Uranus-Pluto and Mercury node, and is bringing a major transformative change in her consciousness through new ideas and impressions coming to her from the soul during meditation. Okay? The transiting Uranus also activates the natal Venus-Saturn square from 4 degree Gemini Pisces. Thank you. And indicates a change in the working process upon the higher levels of the mental plane. You see that Venus there in a subjective area of the soul on its own plane in the 12th house. We note that Saturn, Uranus are the rulers of the throat and sacral centers. Saturn is the abstract mind and a throat, and Uranus here represents the sacral center, indicating the process of the transference or transmutation process between these two centers. And they are the rulers also of the first mental atomic subplane. Uranus, head, Saturn, abstract mind, mental permanent atom. And Venus represents the soul on its own plane, which is also the first mental subplane. Even though the soul manifests through all the three higher subplanes, this is its major focal point. Why? Because the pineal gland found at the first mental subplane, it's his home. That's where we find, you know, a real place of the soul. Okay? Now, this Uranus transit is repeated in its retrograde motion further on through the years, through the months in October 1935, which we don't need to go to it, I'm just mentioning it. And in its direct motion again, as it keeps changing from retrograde to direct, in April 1936. And this process is indicating the working, as DK said, to work from this place of light and love during the coming month. Okay? Now, could you now put the wheel for the 3rd December 1935? Thank you. Now, again, I picked this day and month to show another alignment. In 2 degree Taurus, between the transiting Uranus at 2 degree Taurus, and just to remind ourselves what the Uranus represents, the head center, pineal gland, sacral center, awakening, life-bringing energy. And then you see it's aligned with the solar arc Saturn. In 2 degree there, right, of Taurus, representing the throat and abstract mind, and the natal Neptune at 2 degree. You see the line of alignment now at the 2 degree of Taurus, the sign of light and illumination. Okay? And the Neptune represents the dawn, the dreaming, no color. Ajna, pituitary body. Her Ajna was conditioned, if you remember, by Neptune, sixth ray. Very important planet for this disciple. It's esoteric ruler of her Cancer ascendant. Okay? Now the transiting Uranus is trining also the solar arc ascendant in 2 degree Virgo. Indicating change and adjustment in that garden. It is square to the solar arc Venus in 2 degree Leo. Thank you. Venus is the predominant energy in that garden. Love, beauty, color. And beauty is reflection of love. So we see the powerful alignment in that 2 degree And when we look at the transiting Neptune in 16 Virgo there, 42, it is making a sesquiquadrate with the transiting Uranus at the 2 degree of Taurus, solar arc Saturn, and the natal Neptune. It is semi-square the solar arc Venus in Leo. Okay? So the Neptune has a great power there through the natal Neptune and the transiting Neptune. Okay? And we also find the solar arc Venus is making square the natal Neptune from the 2 degrees of Leo to 2 degree of Taurus. Okay? Now the Venus-Neptune combinations reflect the song of the birds. It means the petals. The petals. The color and energies of the petals in the Echoic Lotus. And it is interesting that if we would investigate in details these petals, the Venus-Neptune energy predominating in the middle circle of the petals. Predominating, but it's present in every circle. Okay? Which is the love circle. It is the heart center. Okay? Soul light and love and soul mind alignment is also here. If we take the Venus representing the fifth ray mind, which he had, okay? So we have another energetic alignment very powerfully bringing together the energies which are really strong conditioning energies of that symbolic garden. And to my understanding of the Egoic Lotus, the biggest lotus flower on that higher levels of the mental plane, with its little flowers represented by the centers also. Now the solar arc Jupiter, her second ray soul planet, is found at 28 Capricorn, 45. Thank you. And on this day also makes an exact semi-square to the natal midheaven in 13 Pisces, 45. Exact. It carries, the midheaven carries a very important midpoint, and that is a Pluto ascendant midpoint, which is found at 13 Gemini 24. In aspect to that MC at 13 Pisces 45, not exact, but in aspect, very close one. You see, the planet Pluto is involved, very transformative first ray energy, and the ascendant is involved also together with the MC. It means the angles of the chart. I see MC and ascendant descendant are involved through this combination of aspects. And they indicate a successful transformational process as a result of the utilization of the soul light on the mental plane, which is taking her spiritual progress forward. Okay? Through building of that garden, or through bringing more energy, light, and the love of the soul expressing also through the egoic lotus, and bringing it to more color and aliveness and loveliness, as he said there. This is supported further by the transiting Chiron at the 13 Gemini. You see the number 13 in relation to the ICMC axis there, okay? And the progress moon is in 13 Capricorn in the seventh house there. It's also activating the angles ICMC in relation to all the other points, okay? And the progress nodal axis at 13 degree Capricorn Cancer over the moon and in relation to all the other points. And the solar arc Uranus at 13 degree Libra. Thank you. You see this enormous alignment in the same degree in one day of the month in December. Okay? Indicating a change, transformation, adjustment, and also a major progress indicating coming to a successful outcome here. Okay? So she is moving forward. To what degree? To that degree as she is capable to utilize these energies and utilize the opportunity they are giving to her. Okay? That's why astrology, you see, indicates for us, as for this disciple, the process of that working from that powerful center of light and love, and what astrological energy she had available to work and to utilize. Okay? Now Venus and Uranus rule her fifth house, Libra. Libra is ruled by Venus and Uranus, esoterically Uranus, and exoterically by Venus. And what is the fifth house? Here we find the causal body, with all its talents and qualities we are able to accumulate. okay, through many lives, okay, all previous experience, and this together with the Cancer and Leo as the entire causal body and permanent atoms. Okay? And you know she has Cancer ascendant, and her progressed ascendant and Uranus and solar arc Venus are found in Leo. A Leo, you know, which we're talking the Leo house, which is the fifth house. Okay? And this house, the fifth house, also indicates the lower and higher creativity, in this case, particularly in relation to the sacral and throat centers. Okay? And during the next few months, there is an alignment of the transiting Pluto, progressed Venus, and solar arc Mars in 27 degree Cancer. Okay? This is another alignment of energies, you see, because, how would I say to you, the sacral center here is also in its lower aspect seen through that Venus Mars, okay? It's very physical on its lowest level in relation to the sacral. And what is the Pluto transiting over these two points indicate? It's trying to eliminate all the obstacles, you know, to raise this energy higher. Pluto is very healing on its higher level, very healing energy, and it's bringing from the depths up into our consciousness to realize what we need to transmute or eliminate in order to transmute the level of energies. Okay? And the Venus-Pluto, particularly in this case, is related also to the initiatory process and the energetic field of the etheric body. Okay? Where the Venus in Gemini is particular focal point of that process. Natal Venus. Okay, I don't want to divert here, which I'm almost doing. We also see that this energetic alignment between the Pluto, Mars, and Venus is happening in the second house, which is the Taurus house, okay? Where Venus is the ruler, actually. It is the house of illumination of the mind, okay? Again, Venus represents the mind, okay? Through evocation of the will, Pluto. So we see we can interpret this alignment from different perspectives. It is a storehouse of life, energy, prana, vitality, and emerging beauty, Venus. I'm talking about the second house now. Okay? So the destructive aspect of the Pluto's will, first ray will, aids in elimination of all what is preventing the emergence and utilization of the light of the soul in the garden or in that egoic lotus flower, where the creative agent is the soul. Okay? It is a house of treasures also of the causal body. It is the place related to the throat center, Taurus. The transformative power of the Pluto will aid in the transmuting process of the lower creativity into the higher creativity of the throat. That's why I mentioned the Mars Venus in the lower creativity aspect in that place. Okay? And now, could you put the wheel now on the 22nd February, 1936? We are looking at the process of the working in that garden, you know, on several months. And I was trying to find how far the energies were going, particularly those in relation to the major issues involved in that symbology. And here, what I want to us to look at is at the Mercury, which is also one of the planets conditioning the throat center. And it's also conditioning the abstract mind. And through the throat center is related to Uranus as the ruler of the sacral center. Now, there is no direct aspect between these two planets in the natal chart. And that's why I was looking where I could find the connection between them. And what I discovered that the natal Mercury-Uranus midpoint found at the 12 degree Gemini 19 is on 22nd February, which we're looking at that day, 1936, activated by the solar arc Mars at 27 Cancer 19 by an exact semi-square to this midpoint. Okay? And it is indicating the increased activation of the transference process between the sacral and throat centers. On the same day which we're looking at, the solar arc Uranus is found at 13 degree Libra 45, now making an exact aspect to the midheaven. 13:45. Okay? And where it is placed at 13 degree Libra is the Aquarian decanate of Libra. Okay? And Aquarius is ruled by Jupiter as the esoteric ruler of Aquarius. And Aquarius ruled the ninth house, which is related to the abstract mind. Okay? And we see that the Pisces midheaven is also ruled by Jupiter. Okay? the progressed moon at 16 degree Capricorn 07 makes an exact semi-square to the natal Jupiter at 1 degree Sagittarius 07 on the same day. We have a powerful Jupiter emerging here, okay? In relation to the Uranus, okay, another important planet, we have like Jupiter the heart, Uranus the head. Then the transiting Jupiter at 21 Sagittarius 05, which is in Leo decanate of that Sagittarius, is making an exact trine to the natal Sun, ruler of Leo, in 21 Aries 05. Exactly. To see this by transit, and in the same day with all what we're looking at, is quite something. Okay? Here we have a Sun Jupiter emerging. Okay? The heart. The heart particularly. Now the transiting Mercury at 6 Aquarius, where the Jupiter is the esoteric ruler, and the transiting moon at 6 degree Pisces, where Jupiter again is the ruler, is in aspect to the solar arc Mercury in 6 Gemini. We're coming back to the Mercury. And here, particularly Mercury-Jupiter emphasis. Okay? Mind and heart. Now for these combinations, it's emerging Jupiter as a second ray soul ruler, as a strongest energy, which obviously represent the soul love and light, as a major conditioning energy of the garden, or the egoic lotus. Now there is the second Saturn return happening. Okay? A very important energy conditioning, this working and meditative process, where Saturn being the ruler of the abstract mind moving through the ninth house, where we have all three Saturn found, natal, progressed, and transiting. Okay? And it is the house of the meditative axis, 3-9 houses of meditation. Okay? And Saturn, by transit, is moving towards the MC, symbolizing the summit, or the highest mental subplane. Okay? Now to see this Saturn return more clearly, we put the quadra wheel on the 11th December 1935, where we see that transiting Saturn makes an exact conjunction with its own natal position at 4 degree Pisces 30. And this is the last contact it made, because it was making a previous contacts by moving retrograde and direct, but this is in a direct movement making its last contact, okay, as a second Saturn return, okay, bringing the focus on the first ray through the alignment with Pluto as a ruler of Pisces. You see? Because Pluto is the esoteric and hierarchical, actually, ruler of Pisces, but we are looking primarily at the esoteric or soul rulership, because this disciple could not touch the higher level of the hierarchical rulership. Primarily, the personality Jupiter ruler and Pluto esoteric ruler. Okay? Because Pluto together with Saturn, you know, they are in combination and relationship of energies producing very powerful first ray energy. Okay? Because Saturn is ruled by first ray on one of its levels. On the same day which we are looking, the progressed moon veiling Neptune, as we know for this disciple, reached an exact sextile to the midheaven. Okay? And the midheaven is found in Cancer decanate of Pisces, where the moon and Neptune are the rulers. So this is an important alignment made here, okay, bringing a powerful Neptunian energy from its exoteric and esoteric levels. And it was evident in the garden, right? Its energy, I mean. Now the transiting sun in 18 Gemini
You mean is, solar arc?
Oh, is it solar arc?
Yeah.
No, it's a progressed sun.
Okay.
Right? Okay. But it is also aligned with the transiting sun and earth, you see, on the other side. Okay?
Right.
This is what I meant, really, that we have the sun alignment again by transit. Before, the transit was from Gemini sign of the sun. Now it's from the Sagittarian Gemini. Okay? And you know, Gemini Sagittarius axis are the archetypal axis of the 3-9 houses of the meditative polarity and lower and higher mind. Okay? And so, here also indicating the subjective contact with the Saturn in the ninth house, which is, you know, found there through the transit, natal, and progressed placement. Okay? So the transiting sun makes sextile to the progressed ascendant also, at 18 degree Leo, as does the progressed sun, right? But the progressed ascendant is happened to be in the third house, And this is the focal point here, you see, of the meditative axis, actually. Okay? Which the sun is ruling, because it is conditioned by Leo, the third house. So, you know, my friends, I will conclude the presentation and leave you to ponder yourselves on the symbology of this garden and try to come up with your own understanding of this garden. Okay? I was sharing my understanding because it is so rich. It is so rich and it's so deep, which would require, you know, much time to spend on it, but this is all we have available. So thank you for your attention. And if there are any comments, please, you can ask or comment on anything you would bring our attention to.
Suzanne says, thank you for a very interesting and challenging body of thought.
Thank you, Suzanne.
And yes, it is. It's quite fascinating.
Well, this is what my, I don't know what part intuitive, part researchful process led me to. Okay?
Well, thank you, Elena. I don't see any other questions or comments. I would like to say that the next webinar is going to be at 9 p.m. GMT on the 25th of February. And then there will be a break. There will be no webinars for March, April, May, or June. We will resume the end of July. And as I said that, we got a hand. So, whoops. Michael, please go ahead.
Hi, Elena. Thank you so much for such a fascinating study. With all these potentialities, with energies being active, do we have much information as
to Michael,
you're
how
breaking
she
up.
May have used these energies?
Wait, you're breaking up.
Yeah, that happens sometimes with my internet connection, I guess. With all these potentials that she has energetically, do we have any information as to how she may have made use of them?
As we will go through the rest of the webinars, okay, we will discover, okay, then if there is any indication how she utilized these energies and to what extent, okay? Like the next webinar, you see, is bringing another first ray energy aspect with the third year of the 3-year Vesak cycle, which is culminating at the full moon in May in 1936, okay, which was adding the first ray energy to all this what we discussed, and he's saying she's entering crisis, okay,
mm-hmm.
which is also indicated here, because you know Saturn return is not easy energy, to deal with. Okay? And it's a major planet, you know, of crisis. And so this process, which she was asked to deal with in the garden and work from that center with all these available energies, okay, to what extent she had a knowledge of these astrological energies, we can't say, but certainly DK had it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Certainly. And that's why he brought this particular emphasis through the months and the days that we actually see them. You see? But we need to find them. We
right.
need to find them. If, from my perspective, I am looking for it. I am looking for it because I know they are there. You see, I need to find them because I know they are there.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Uh-huh. I look forward to the next one.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Okay, well, good night, everyone. I'm going to end the webinar now because I don't see any more hands or questions. So thank you again, Elena, and good night, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, including you, BL. Thank you.
Yes, and to Brett and Joe from their
And to Brett and Joe, yes. My other support behind the scene.
Yes, thank you. Bye,
thank
everybody.
You. Bye-bye.